Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
This is David Marler, UFO researcher, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and today on the pod, we have an international European flavor to the podcast. I am joined by journalist, film producer, researcher, author, and host of his own show on Danish National Radio, co-hosted with astrophysicist Anja Sette Andersen, titled Flying Saucer, and I'm going to let him in a moment pronounce that properly, Frederik Dirks Gottlieb. Frederik, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Andy.
It's awesome to finally speak to you in person on the pod. It's something I think almost happened a couple of years back when you first got started out. But here you are, a huge success in your own right. And congratulations on that. And first off, you have to pronounce the podcast in Danish with its actual name, because as we've said, I'm going to absolutely kill it. So what's the name of the podcast?
It's Danish. It's Flying Saucer in Danish. So it's Flyvende Tallerken, which is only Danish people would ever be able to say, I guess.
And people right now know why I did not try and pronounce that. So yeah, but we'll go with Flying Saucer. But Frederik, like I say, congrats on the success. We're going to get to that. Welcome to the podcast. I want to start off talking about you, your interest in the subject, and we'll build on from there. Your interest in the topic, I believe, came from your father, who was a member of the Danish UFO Society back in the 50s and 60s. Is that right?
That's correct. My dad, Ebbe, was his name. It's a weird name in Danish. Already when he was 17, 18 years old, he got really fascinated by the UFO topic, and he actually made his own like UFO group. It was called Gentofte UFO Group, which was what you called it was Gufok, which is a really bad name for a UFO club. But he did that club back in, I think, 59. And that's when all of the young aspiring UFO nerds from Denmark really started gathering and meeting in houses and clubhouses, stuff like that. And when he got me, he didn't tell me about this for basically 20 years until one day he threw a book about Roswell on my bed and was like, yeah, you can try and read this. And I just figured it was sort of science fiction stuff. And then I read it. I got really surprised. And then a few years later, he passed away, which was, of course, really sad. But I found all of his old UFO books and photos and membership magazines and stuff like that. And I read it all and I got totally fascinated. And I think that's when it dawned me how much of a UFO guy he really was. It was way beyond Close Encounters of the Third Kind and stuff that I used to watch with my dad. So, yeah.
Had he had any sightings or experiences of his own that you knew about or he'd written down?
As far as I know, he never had an experience himself, which is pretty uncanny because he was what I would call a, you know, hardcore believer all of his life. And I remember every night when I went to bed, if I woke up, he would always sit and, you know, just watch the skies. And he always told me that he was looking for flying saucers. And I sort of thought that he was, you know, making a joke or being witty about it. But I later found out that he was actually scouting for flying saucers.
What was, I mean, you're around my age, so you're late 30s, 40 years old, yeah, I think.
Yeah, I just turned 40, yeah.
You look so much younger than me. For anyone listening on the audio, Frederick looks far younger than I do. It's the Danish culture compared to Scottish culture, I think.
Or just this grainy camera, maybe. So.
Or yeah, maybe it's a filter, who knows. But you've got the Russell Brand thing going on, I think. I've got the Ricky Gervais look going on. But I was wondering, like, Danish culture, what was that like in the 50s and 60s? Where we know in the US... And predominantly the audience for this podcast is mostly United States and Canada and the UK, with a smattering of other countries thrown in. So hello to everyone, wherever you are. What was Danish society like in the 50s and 60s? And where would the UFO conversation have been around then?
I think actually Denmark was a little bit ahead of its time back then. People who were enthusiastic about UFOs really followed the American way of talking about UFOs. And I know, you know, Adamski, who was one of the most famous researchers back then, he visited Denmark quite often. And he actually met with my father at one point. That's what I've been told, at least, but by my father's best friend, Eric, who was also in that UFO club. And so he used to come here. He had a good friend called H.C. Petersen, who founded the big Danish UFO club called SUFOI, which is short for Scandinavian UFO Investigation, a club that is still around. Today it's the oldest club in Denmark, or group or society or whatever you want to call it. Today it's mainly a group of debunkers, but back then they really believed in UFOs, and as well as did my dad. And HC was actually a former pilot, fighter pilot. So he had a lot of respect here in Denmark, and really for, you know, the most of his life, he died, I think, 10, 20 years ago, but most of his life, he really spread the word about UFOs here in Denmark. And that meant that, you know, a lot of ufologists and, you know, people with a lot of knowledge of UFOs used to come here and do lectures and stuff like that. So they were on board here in Denmark, and we had a lot of clubs, even though we're a pretty small country of 5.5 million. So mainly in Copenhagen, these clubs would be, there was quite a lot of them actually back then.
And where is that perception now? So fast forward, you know, 2017 was a huge time for a lot of folks in the UFO subject. And I can hear older listeners rolling their eyes, or those who have been involved in the topic a lot longer. Mm-hmm. Ufology didn't start in 2017, but it certainly got a lot more folks back on board, or reignited the fire, I think, in a lot of people's bellies for the subject. How is it covered in the press, if indeed at all? What's public perception like now? And can you talk about that for me?
Sure. So the reason why I started this podcast in 2020 was because, just like you, Andy, I've been following it since 2017. I don't know how long. Have you been following it longer than that?
I had an interest as a child, and even growing up, I would watch documentaries, you know, check out the odd book, magazines now and again. So I always had a hand in it. And then I'd started the Twitter account long before I started the podcast, or even wanted or had the idea for the podcast. But I think really getting intensely interested was To the Stars again back in 2017, 2018.
Sure, exactly the same here. You know, had some interest, didn't really think too hard about whether this was a real thing or not. And then 17 came around and I really started getting my interest peaked. And then in the summer of 2020, when you had one of the big New York Times articles really confirming that the three Navy videos were legit and did indeed come from the Navy, that's when I thought it's weird that no one in Denmark is writing about this. Because at that time, there was zero interest. There was no mainstream media doing anything, barely even anything on Twitter at that point. So I thought, okay, let's try this. And I called my editor. I mean, this is DR. It's the Danish Broadcasting Corporation. It's the equivalent of, you know, a BBC. It's a public service, but it's huge in Denmark. It's by far the, you know, the biggest brand within media. So I thought, there's no way in hell my editor is gonna think this is a good idea. But she was like, yeah, cool. That sounds awesome. I've read about it. You go ahead. And I basically started the show. It's one of the easiest show to ever get through, which is weird and paradoxical. And I got Anja Seti Andersen, the astrophysicist, who's, you know, a famous personality here in Denmark and, you know, internationally acclaimed as an astrophysicist. Stardust is her main topic. And she started telling me about the Oumuamua and Avi Loeb and stuff like that when I called her. So she kind of knew about this topic and had some interesting ideas, but she was also new to it. And I thought that was very important that she came into this not only skeptical, but, you know, not too biased about whether or not there are UFOs. So then it really started popping off here in Denmark, because all of a sudden you have this UFO podcast on the main broadcaster. And so ever since then, I've just been doing media nonstop, basically, television, radio. And yeah, it's actually been a pretty rough couple of years. It's been fun. It's been exciting. But, you know, the lack of UFO experts here was really imminent. So, of course, we still have the old Sufoy guys, and they're still doing a great job, but they're more on the debunker side, and I was more on the straight down the middle, just trying to really explain to the people what was going on, because it was such a crazy time.
And you've done a good job doing that. I don't speak Danish, but if you put your name into YouTube or you put Frederick's name into YouTube, folks, you'll see a lot of videos, clips, TV shows, podcasts that you've been on, and you seem to be representing the subject well. So well done on that. You've certainly filled a void. I wonder if in the last couple of years you asked folks in Denmark, you know, what have you heard about the US hearings that have gone on? David Grush, UFO whistleblowers, come forward and talked about, you know, biologics, recovered craft. Are those topics well known in Denmark? Is that something your average person on the street knows about? Or where do those sit?
I think within some demographies, you would definitely have people being in the know. But I guess it's not unlike your country, whereas there are still people who just lives in a whole nother universe, no pun intended, where, you know, politics and the most basic news is everything they know about. Mm. But I would say that in my own demographic, and, you know, especially I think maybe younger guys, younger, I mean, 20 to 50, there is a keen interest. And, you know, the numbers we've been doing here on the podcast really speaks for themselves, because, you know, it's hundreds of thousands of downloads per episode. And you know, within the top 10 of the most downloaded, you know, neck and neck with news podcasts and stuff like that. But that still doesn't necessarily say a lot, because that's a lot of people. But, you know, compared to people who know about what's, you know, going on politically, it's still, you know, a small number of people, but it's coming along, and it's really been coming along fast.
When I was looking to do some research for this, because believe it or not, folks, sometimes I do, and I've had guests on in the past from China talking about UFOs, South America, primarily Brazil, obviously yourself from Denmark, and you look around and there's always been quite a large amount of cases. And I struggled to find a lot of well-known Danish cases. Mm. And the same two, and I've got them up here, kept coming up. And you can correct me if there would be any more. Yeah. But one, you're going to have to help me out with pronunciation here. It's from 1970, and it's from a small town of Gundusoilil. G-U-N-D. And it was a famous incident on June 12th, 1970. Witnesses reported seeing a large metallic object with flashing lights hovering over the sea. Some witnesses claimed to have seen smaller objects coming off the main craft. It garnered some media attention, sparked public interest in UFOs across Denmark. That was one. And then there's one from Copenhagen Airport in 2011. And that, again, was several UFO reports, sightings near sightings near Copenhagen Airport. Witnesses described seeing bright lights moving erratically in the sky, performing maneuvers that seemed beyond the capabilities of conventional craft. The sightings caused a temporary stir in the media and prompted speculation about the nature of the objects. It seems like sightings are pretty low in Denmark, which I thought, given where you're based, kind of further north, beautiful clear skies up that way. I've been in a boat that I was talking to you before we recorded up that way when I was much younger, and I was surprised at how little there was to go off of. And even that 2011 sighting got me quite, that's relatively recent, and I couldn't find anything on it.
No,
but again, that's algorithms, Google, all that kind of stuff. So
I'm sorry to say it, but those two cases are not really well known here in Denmark either. That's one thing I've noticed. Then when people from other countries, they have some cases that's not really known here in Denmark, but we do have cases here. It's just, and you know, that's a great point with, you know, the clear sky and all that stuff. And also we're close connected to Greenland as well. So there should be a lot of stuff, and we do have a lot of stuff, but it's been either debunked or, you know, hidden away or not been reported on by media. So, and that's when I really realized that when I started doing the show, because I have my own document with hundreds of cases, and people have videos and a lot of exciting stuff. And I have a lot of people on my podcast who explain their stories. So these stories have been there all along, but no one have picked them up really. And the media haven't really been at all keen to hear these stories from people. So I think that has been, I think we will see now more and more of these stories come out. But so far for me, it's been through my podcast, but that makes it a little bit difficult for someone like you to try and, you know, research the stories. But I would say the most famous case we have is probably a case that I actually wrote a little bit about from the 70s, where this guy Ivar Mørup, in a little small town called Haderslev, and he was a police officer, he had this experience where his car suddenly stopped, you know, classic car stopping, and all of the electronics kind of just went out. And then he reported on this UFO hovering above him, and he had a camera on his car. And he got a photo of it. But of course, when you film something that is shining a light on you, all you get is, you know, a dot. So we know something was there. And, you know, he actually became sort of a celebrity here in Denmark for years after that. And you know, told his story to the day that he died. So because he was a police officer, that story definitely was something that people knew about here in Denmark. But that's probably the only famous case that I know of. But we have some cases, of course, in the podcast, and that's been in the news lately, that are, you know, people in the coming generations will know about for sure, because there are definitely some interesting cases out there.
Could you either let me know, share with the listeners and viewers some of those cases, or even some of the patterns or some of the commonalities that come up within those, and what are people talking about to you?
Yeah, so one thing, we have a lot of different patterns, as I'm sure you get, you probably get messages about that all the time as well. Of course, the shapes vary. I had a lot of triangles being reported on, and a lot of those people saw them in, you know, in the 2000s. And then here lately, what I've been, and also seeing videos, is the orbs and the tic-tac shaped UFOs. Recently I had two pilots on my show who are currently active commercial airline pilots. And they actually flew from, at some point, to Rome, around Rome, and where, you know, the pilot and his co-pilot looked out the window and a tic-tac-shaped object was hanging right next to them. And these pilots, they were in the studio out at, you know, the broadcaster, and they really didn't want it to be there. And we had to keep them anonymous. And they explained their stories, and he was actually calling it the Stimerol UFO and mixing up the tic-tac, which kind of goes to show that he knew nothing about, you know, terms of ufology or anything like that. And he was quite nervous to actually share this story. And the object that was hanging there, they saw it clearly, and then it just jetted off. And I've had a lot of pilots reaching out, talking about similar stories to that, probably a dozen. And also one fighter pilot who had two experiences in the actually here above in the Danish skies. So definitely a lot of people have had weird experiences here, just like anywhere else. But I think it comes down to the reporting systems, comes down to the media not really being interested in those stories for many years.
Here in the UK, if there is a UFO story, it still tends to be followed with the X-Files music, flying saucer graphic, Little Green Men, and the news hosts tend to be quite giggly or dismissive of the topic. Now and again, you'll get one or two who might be more interested or grounded on it, but there's still that kind of giggle factor, that laugh that goes along with it. Is that similar to, imagine those pilots you spoke to, they weren't speaking to you, they weren't speaking to Anya, and they were on your typical Danish, you know, talk show, TV show, news show, would it still have that same dismissive laugh factor to an X-Files sort of theme?
It definitely had in the beginning. I still encounter X-Files music everywhere I go. It's becoming the soundtrack of my life. I'm sure you know the feeling, which
I've had it a few times,
Yeah, and you know, you have this 50-plus radio host who think it's such a funny gag to put on this music, and but I would say it was like that in the beginning, and I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I've had a lot of notable personalities on my show here. We had the Danish astronaut Andreas Mogensen. We had, you know, one of my co-hosts is Søren Sørensen, who used to be a fighter pilot who flew for more than 20 years. When I contacted him, that was actually just to show him the Navy videos, which he still deems to be very weird and definitely unresolved. And he also looked at, we also had a discussion between him and Mick West. He's definitely not buying the Mick West theories about, especially the gimbal video. And I also had he is the head of warfare operations here at the Defense Academy in Denmark, Carsten Maup, who's also a commander. And, you know, I was with both Søren and Carsten in the big morning show here in Denmark. And Carsten showed up in uniform because he wanted to show Denmark that he's actually taking this subject very serious. And Carsten also said in my show that he believes that those videos definitely shows that there is something out there, whether it's man-made or not, but something that is really hard to explain. So those two people, Søren and Carsten, very, very respected within their field, one still in the military in Denmark and one at the Defense Academy. They have been great ambassadors and really, you know, taken out the giggle factor a lot, because when you interview someone like that, you tend to not giggle as much as when I'm sitting there.
I'm right in saying some of the bigger names more well-known names you've spoken to from the US. Avi Loeb has been on the podcast, Leslie Kane. I've got Avi Loeb here twice. You spoke to Lou Elizondo, didn't you, a couple of years back?
Yeah.
And what have those conversations been like for you? And I wonder, do you hear from Danish listeners who hear those voices who maybe weren't overly familiar with them or new to the topic in Denmark? And what have they been saying?
Yeah, it's been really a wild journey. And I've definitely felt really alone, even though we had a lot of listeners, really alone in this topic in Denmark, where it seemed like it was new to most people, except for the people, of course, who had experience and stuff like that. But for most people, they were following my podcast, not necessarily following people on Twitter and stuff like that. They do that now, of course. And I'm sure a lot of listeners also listen to your fantastic podcast, which was a big inspiration for me personally. It was definitely a lonely journey for years. And I actually developed a chronic headache and stuff like that because I'm a journalist. I work as a journalist and I used to do more serious stuff. I find this serious as well. Don't get me wrong. But I was really worried how people would take to my new hobby of UFOs and diving into that. A lot of people said, don't do it before I did it. And I think, you know, of course, Anja Seti Andersen, my co-host, means a lot because she kind of approved of the podcast, which was very important in the scientific circles here, which means that now we have had most of the notable scientists in Denmark on our show and really been diving into all of these different theories of UFOs and stuff like that, which has been amazing. But it was a lonely journey. I had a period where I definitely was anxious, had a lot of headaches, didn't know if I was being fooled by some of these people or if these people were who they said they were. I mean, I tend to believe people, and I definitely believe 95 of the people that I've spoken to. And talking to Luis Elizondo was a great experience and really, I think, opened a lot of our listeners' eyes to what was going on here. And I know that he's become a little bit more controversial the last couple of years, but he's never been nothing but nice to me, and I have no reason to doubt him, really.
I think when you say controversial, Lou's been, quiet for 18 months or so, but he pops up now and again on Twitter. People have taken... He spent so long doing the podcast circuit, and he said so much that he then said, I've said everything I've got to say right now. He's gone away to write the book, which people are waiting on coming out. And everyone keeps going back and picking over the same conversations, the same comments. And I think that happens across the board, doesn't it? When people have got these. And it's, you've got one way where Lou Elizondo done it. He done his podcast run. He said, look, I've said everything I've got to say for now, and disappeared for a while from the circuit. And then you've got others who stay around and they go back and go back. And again, people will complain, they say the same things, but what more can they say without starting to potentially make stuff up? So it's a difficult one for these folks, and I totally appreciate that. Definitely, Lou Elizondo's book seems to be one of the hot topics everyone's waiting on coming out, if indeed it does come out this year. I know there was some talk online recently it might have been coming out in November, and that wasn't true. That was just a holding page for a publishing company. But you've used your own experiences in these last couple of years and your own history in the topic to write two books. One of them was a children's book titled, in English, Look Up, UFOs Exist, and then your own more recent adult book, The UFO Mystery. Do you want to just touch on those? And for a first off, Look Up, UFOs Exist, what made you write a children's book on the UFO topic?
Yeah, well, I thought this is a fascinating topic for kids, really, because every time I talk to anyone, just like you mentioned earlier, where did your interest start? It's always, I used to love UFOs as a kid. And now there's this whole new way of how we look at UFOs. And the fact that we know that there is something out there, whatever it is. I'm not, drawing any conclusions, try not to do that. But I felt that this was a topic that a lot of kids really dug. And I know that a lot of my listeners listen to the show with their, 12-year-old kids. So that's really where I got the idea. And also the fact that I, as a kid, got this interest from my father. So it's really a book that's both about grief. It takes place after my father died. And in this case, in this book, I'm younger than I was in real life, but I'm sort of cleaning up after my dad, just as I did in real life. So it's both working with grief and then also finding this fantastic interest and this hobby through my father and, getting to know him over again, really, which is the feeling I have now, because my father wasn't necessarily the type to open up. He did have a drinking problem after he got divorced from my mother, and he did die too young as well. So it was kind of a little bit of a tragic story. even though he had a great life up until the divorce. But I felt that I, through working this hobby that he loved so much, I got to know him much better. And even though I haven't talked to him in 11 years, now I really feel like I knew who my dad was also as a young man. And I've been talking to a lot of his old colleagues and old friends who was just dying to tell me about, you know, how much his passion for UFOs. So it's also been to help myself, really, because I never really got to deal with the grief of losing my father. And I think that's why subconsciously I did delve into this UFO topic, because it was both, you know, a hunt for the unknown, but also a little bit of a hunt for my father.
Yeah, it seems like it's been very therapeutic to put that down on paper and kind of get those thoughts out. And I wonder, where do you see now, you know, looking at your dad's past and how that's influenced you in the UFO topic and maybe the mistakes of the past in terms of UFOs, where do you see that taking your journey in the UFO topic? Is it a case of keep producing shows, content, researching? Do you see your role in the UFO circuit becoming larger? I say circuit, that's the wrong word, but, you know, especially in Denmark, where there's such a small pond of, like you say, UFO researchers, shows, podcasts, books, you know, journalists really involved in the topic. How can you take that forward?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I've been so busy that I haven't really, because I would like to have a bigger presence on YouTube and stuff like that, and do some stuff in English. I mean, I know I got to practice a little bit, but
listen, your English accent's better than mine, so yeah, you're doing okay.
I don't know about that. I really dig your accent. It's so cool. I would like to do that. And the podcast, we actually did a pilot in English, which is being pushed to international broadcasters like Spotify and Audible, and hopefully they want to take it, because I would love to do the show in English and to try to broaden the horizon a little bit. And I think, you know, there is no reason why this topic should be only Danish for me. But at the same time, doing a show at a public service broadcaster like DR, that kind of, what can you say, it kind of constrains you a little bit, because you have to be really scientific about how you go about it. You have to be really smart about it. You have to be sure not to, how can I say, embarrass yourself. And I'm not saying that people on YouTube do that, but they can be a little bit strict of what they like you to do besides your role within DR. Just as I'm sure that if you're a journalist on, you know, BBC or something similar, that they will kind of follow you around a little bit and make sure that you represent them well. And DR is definitely the same way. So that's also why I've been a little bit hesitant, I think, about, you know, blowing up a big YouTube channel. And also, you know, it's been a handful. I do actually three other shows other than Flying Saucer on the side, and I've been doing books, so I really haven't had the time. But yeah, it's probably coming at some point.
No, that's fair, and I appreciate having to work within guidelines and parameters based on, you know, you're representing a broadcaster. It's not just you and your co-host here. You're representing something in an organization. I've got the luxury of being, you know, self-regulated. You know, I can try and work within my own, you know, moralistic parameters, whatever that might be. But yeah, it's got its pros and cons, doesn't it? You mentioned before, and I want to spend the last part of the podcast talking about your thoughts, your opinion. You said you don't want to come to conclusions, but I'm going to ask you to. The UFO topic, this mystery, what do you think is happening right now? What is this all going towards? Are we dealing with non-human intelligences? Is it aliens from other planets? Is it man-made tech? What's right now inside Frederick's head?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the million-dollar question, right? I guess that you've been asked that question many times too. And I feel like the more I dive into this, the more confused I'm getting, really. It's sort of a imposter syndrome or something like that. The more you know, the more you know that you don't know about this topic. Yeah. It's huge. It's endless. But I've come to the conclusion, I mean, I'm trying to be journalistic, so I'm trying to keep an open mind. And you know, sometimes I'm completely sure that this is non-human intelligence in some way. And other times I'm, you know, being pulled back into my, you know, the way I used to think about the world only like 5 years ago. So I'm still struggling with that newfound, knowledge of what this could be, and the fact that there is something out there that they seem to not be able to figure out. And, you know, when I bring experts on, and, you know, Danish experts, and we have a really some of the best scientists in the world, and it's really, you know, top class, even though we may not be the most famous country, but they are high level for sure. And I've had, you know, space engineers and all kind of stuff on my show, and they're not biased at all, and they're not at all feeling the need to tell us that UFOs exist, but they all agree something weird going on here. And whether that's the videos, whether that's the stories you get from people, it, you know that as well as me, Andy. When you talk to people with these stories and you look into their eyes and you know they're not lying, that does something to you, right? It's difficult to be completely cynical about this topic when you talk to like over 100 people with, you know, clear experiences, and some of them have videos. It often only shows you a little bit of light, which is difficult to conclude anything off of. But that's how cameras work, I guess. So I'm trying to keep an open mind. I'm being open to this, maybe some kind of man-made technology. I'm also open to this being, you know, a man-made cultural phenomenon, but I'm definitely also open to this being more than that, to this being something really exciting that I can't even formulate what that would be.
So as a journalist then, taking your flying saucer hat off for a moment, put the journalistic one back on, and like you say, you try and look at these things straight down the middle, and I like to think I can sit on a fence, I can look at both sides of an argument myself. When you see David Grush coming out last year and having those sit-down interviews with Ross Coulthart, you see him sit at those hearings and talk about biologics, recovered craft, recovered materials. What was going through your head?
I mean, that was a lot to take in at one time, right? That was a crazy summer, and I had Ross on the year before that, before he got really famous with the David Grush story, and he was, you know, he's such an awesome storyteller, and people really reacted to that episode, and he just has this way of bringing these stories to life, and he really did that with the David Grush story as well. It's so difficult to say if David Grush is telling the truth. I mean, this is sort of a cliche. I'm sure that he thinks he's telling the truth, and I tend to believe him. I have no reason not to, but I do think that he is himself a little bit unsure of what the truth is and what he knows. But I mean, I really don't want to, you know, talk bad about anyone. I think David Grush seems to be, you know, a really good guy, and he definitely have all his papers, and you know, what do you call it in English? A CV.
His resume, I suppose, would be
there. Yeah. Definitely speaks for itself. So who am I to sit here and say what is true and what is not? It's just difficult for me to really look at the American political system and really figure out what's going on. So I've also had some analysts here in Denmark who are, you know, America analysts, who knows a lot about the political system, and have them look at it, and they even struggle to kind of see through what's going on. So that is, of course, a big obstacle. Why is this information not coming further along quicker? Why can't they just figure out whether what he's telling is the truth or not? So I'm definitely choosing to believe Grush, but he could be misled, of course.
What's the Danish government's position on UFOs?
They have none. it's really boring. I had one politician on my show, and that was after the first hearing. And he was really cool about it. And he was like, why aren't we talking about this? If there is something in our skies, whether it being from this planet or not, we got to figure out what is flying around here. But I've reached out to the Defense Department, and every time they kind of say, yeah, maybe the Minister of Defense will talk to you, and then you come back a few months later and they're like, yeah, so now Ukraine is going on, or now something. They have an excuse every time, and it's, I guess it's legit excuses. Very important stuff is going on around the world. But it's been very difficult to get any answers out of them. And I actually were in possession of the old military files, the Air Force files, the UFO files, sure. Because they used to be reported directly to the Danish Air Force, and now you're going to that old UFO organization I talked about, SUFOI, which is still doing this work of trying to resolve these cases for people. But back then it was the Air Force, and I've been looking through that folder, which is still around, and a lot of unsolved cases in that folder. You know, skeptics would probably say that most of them have no really data to back anything up, because it's mostly just stories, but it's interesting stuff. And you do have some military people reporting on stuff they've seen. And of course you have some Greenland stuff as well, where you actually in my show had an expert in Greenland who found an old letter from the States to Greenland with a UFO reporting schedule. So there's been discussions between Greenland, Denmark, and the States going back to the 50s and 60s about this topic.
What do you see some of the struggles being going forward for Denmark to have to break through? What kind of barriers have to be overcome for the UFO topic to maybe go mainstream, to go that next level, probably quite similar to maybe where we are in the UK?
Yeah, I think we're probably pretty similar to you guys. It's difficult to change something that has been the norm for, you know, 100 years. Like, UFOs don't exist, aliens don't exist. So to really change that, it seems like we go one step ahead and then we go one or two steps backwards every time. You know, you have open hearings, you have Grush, you have these credible people, Luis Elizondo, and then you have the Mexico case, of course, with the and people get really disappointed, because that made huge headlines here in Denmark. And I really did my best to kind of talk it down a little bit, because I knew just, you know, this could make it all come down crashing really quick.
But listen, let me ask you on that then. Yeah, that's really interesting, because that did make worldwide news. Mm-hmm. And I still get lots of folks asking me about the mummies situation, which is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And for me, I've not completely dismissed it, I don't think, when I've talked about this. I'm trying not to contradict myself. But for me, that whole charade, the issue was the presentation of it, how it was done, and how it's been handled. And if it is or was genuine, they messed it up in a big, big way. And like, if that's reaching the shores of Denmark and making a news, you know, a splash in the news, it did here in the UK. I had lots of mainstream radio shows get in touch with me, asking me my thoughts on it. And I jumped on and shared those. And I tried to be positive and think, you know, this is an opportunity for folks who maybe have an interest in the UFO topic, yeah, or potentially would have an interest to get involved. So you don't want to ridicule it and dismiss it. But it was done in such a poor way from a PR perspective. I think that just goes to show, even with what's potentially incredible evidence, there's a way to present it, isn't there?
There is, and people sometimes ask me what would be great evidence, and that's such a fascinating question, because what would be great evidence? You know, either if there's a bright video, clear video, it's probably CGI. If it's grainy, it could be an airplane. If it's little mummies, it's probably man-made in some way, you know, gathered from animal bones or whatever. So it seems like no matter what information we kind of put forward, you can always debunk it. You can always, you know, the Midwest way of doing stuff, and I like Midwest a lot. I think he's a very smart guy, but, you know, to try to replicate something, see, okay, we have this recording here, I can actually do that in my own camera. That's not a scientific way to go about, as I don't believe, because you're just trying to replicate something. And what does that really tell you? So I don't really know what really good evidence would be nowadays. It would be, I think it's only when people see something with their own eyes or they have some certain belief, why that would be, you know, would be individual. But that seems to be the only way to really convince people and to convince the masses. So I think it's a long journey to try to, for people like us to try to explain the complexity of this topic to people, but it will probably take a long time. But, you know, people here in Denmark, they complain and they often write me like, why doesn't the mainstream media cover this more? I actually think the mainstream media cover this quite a lot, because every time there is a big story coming out of the States or Mexico or Brazil, you know, a lot of outlets actually pick it up here. And I get a lot of phone calls from journalists trying to, you know, use me as a source. So I feel it's a lot have been happening in these, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, which is, you know, way more than I thought would ever happen here in Denmark.
And something I've been finishing off a lot of my shows with in the last couple of weeks, just for the first part of the year, is asking my guests and listeners, what are your hopes for 2024 for the UFO topic? I suppose for you, not only from a Danish perspective, but also European and worldwide, that for you would indicate some form of progress in the UFO topic. What can you see, or what do you hope happens?
I hope that, actually, you know, I talked to a former guest of yours as well, Daniel Otis from Canada, and there is a Canadian report coming out this year, which I think would be, I mean, I never have high hopes for these government reports, but just the fact that they're gathering this report and bringing it to the people, hopefully, we assume, is something big. And coming from another country than the States, I think would be really healthy, especially because Canada is a country that is very well regarded here in Europe. I think in most European countries, we kind of feel like we're, you know, more connected to them on some levels than the Americans. That would be huge. And then, of course, it's going to be exciting to see what happens with the whole Kirkpatrick show with his last report. I think we all know what it's going to be. You know, he kind of already spilled the beans on that one. But how is the world going to take to that report and to what he's been saying for the last couple of weeks, months? That's a big one, I think. That could really change how the discourse is going to be moving forward. So that's some of the stuff that I'm really keeping my eye on. What about you, Andy?
Oh, I was hoping, given you're a podcast host and journalist, you would ask me some questions here. So right now, I see a lot of people online talking about the David Grush op-ed. So he's going to be writing a piece, and I still don't think I've seen where it's going to be published. People were hopeful of Washington Post or New York Times or Politico, some kind of organization like that. Mm-hmm. And what that may or may not say within it, I wouldn't get too hopeful that an op-ed is going to move the needle or push things too far down the line. But I think it's always interesting to hear from David Grush. He's not oversaturated himself and put himself too out there. Honestly, I'm going to go slightly different tact with this, and I've mentioned, I think, a few times, I think a lot of the media that's coming down the pipeline this year is going to be really interesting from various different perspectives. One, Lou Elizondo's book is going to cause a stir in a good way, a bad way, an indifferent way, in every which way possible, depending on who it is. I think that's going to be incredibly subjective and divisive. I look forward to it, though. I'm looking forward to James Fox's documentary, The Program, is its current working title. I think if that's going to be the predecessor to The Phenomenon, that could be a really important piece to come out. And given we know James Fox is speaking to some of those whistleblowers that we're hoping come forward, there's a good chance some material makes it into the documentary as well. And from an entertainment point of view, but I think that's got a really important part to play in shaping public perspective. There's a few things coming out, and from a movie front and TV front, The Three Body Problem is about to debut on Netflix in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That is going to have an international impact one way or another. It's a lot of money being put into it. I'm watching the Chinese version just now on YouTube, which is free, which has been pretty interesting. I'm enjoying that.
So I'm looking forward to review it. I'm also a TV series reviewer here in Denmark. So
okay.
I'm really looking forward to that one as well.
Do you know what? Might join you for a bit of a collab on that if you want then, because I'll definitely be chatting with that, and Dan's going to get in on that one too when it comes out.
Do you know Dan on my show?
No.
We actually had Dan on one time talking about the photo.
Calvin. Yeah, Calvin. I do know.
He was awesome. But I think, and I know you have your sources as well, probably have the best sources in the game, Andy. But but from what I heard from Alessandro's team, it seems like we may be going to wait a little bit on that book. That's just the gist I'm getting when I'm communicating with his team.
It might be summer, it might be end of year, it might be next year. I genuinely just think it's any of the dates that have been pushed out are purely online publishers with holding dates. That's all it ever was. And the book was still under review last that he confirmed. Danny Sheehan said some things that I don't think were quite accurate for whatever reason. And right now, the only fact is that the book does not have a release date. That's literally it. So, but I suppose good news that came out today, as we record this, it's the 27th of February, Frederick, isn't it? Diana Pasulka's books, American Cosmic and Encounters, have been picked up to be produced and made into a TV series, which I think is fantastic. What that looks like, I've got no idea, or what kind of format it's going to be in. But I think Diana's wonderful, and I think that's a really good direction to take it. So she's brilliant. Do you remember there was a very small window, I think, last year, where HBO had the three-part... Was it HBO had a three-part series? Was it J.J. Abrams produced it called UFO?
Yeah, yeah.
And it seemed to like fall off the deep end. It might be four-part even. It fell off the deep end really quickly at the end.
Yeah, it kind of threw Luis Elizondo under the bus. And that really... You know, at least here was when people started sending me messages about Luis Elizondo questioning, you know.
It went quite conspiratorial, the last part of it, from what I remember, which was disappointing. And I think I was like, that was disappointing. It tried to catch the crest of a wave and just missed out. I would love to see a lot of different projects maybe ignite people's interest in different ways that, you know, wonderful people like us, for people like us, Frederick, who'll check out our podcasts and content, and they'll buy people's books, they'll read people's blogs, and they'll just get an interest in the UFO topic. And I think a flood of new voices with an interest in UFOs is really good for the topic, and hopefully drown out some of the naysayers or the trolls. But I also think, from a professional point of view, some new names like David Grush would be great. I think I've said before, me and Dan were talking, one David Grush is great, but five or six David Grushes from different perspectives, male and female, would be even better. All talking about what they've worked on, why they've worked on it, what they can say about, you know, anti-gravity technology or biological materials they've sampled or signals they've maybe found from somewhere. All of that coming together, I think, would have a much bigger impact than just one individual constantly pushing forward. So,
and then also, you know, the constant developments within, you know, the James Webb Telescope, the big interest in that, and I'm really trying to connect those two things as well. You know, that it's not just UFOs over here and then the universe over here, and you know, that's boring scientific stuff, and this is the fun conspiracy stuff. I think it's a good idea to kind of unite the two things, because when you have someone like Anja C. Andersen, who I'm doing my show with, tell you about the universe, and we have sciences on, tell you about all the stuff we don't know about, which is basically everything. That is equally as mind-blowing as thinking about someone visiting us, if not even more. And, you know, so I think people also need to remember that, you know, we are living in a big mystery, UFOs or not. And I think it's important to remember that. And I think it's healthy to have something unresolved to kind of dig into. I just love this topic. And I think that I do think that, you know, documentaries and stuff like that is getting harder and harder to do because of the slow turnarounds. I'm also actually a film producer here, and I did a lot of stuff 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And really the why I fell in love with podcasting is the quick turnaround, you know, being able to take stories, develop them really quick, and have maybe even more engaged listeners than you have doing a visual project. So I think it's becoming more and more difficult with these deep dives, these documentaries. James Fox, of course, is still doing really great work. But it's difficult because once they come out, it's old news to a lot of UFO people and on to the next one.
And that's why I've always stuck by that no matter how good a documentary is, you're not going to get what people would class as smoking gun evidence in a documentary, because I am sure, and I would hope, if, for example, James Fox came across the greatest UFO video known to man, that he would be speaking to major news networks to, within days, have a special presentation on live news. Here's this video. This is the evidence, folks. And, you know, he would get it out there. And I would hope he'd be rewarded for doing so. You know, I've got no issue with that. But I don't think he would wait a year to build it into a documentary bit by bit by bit. And same with the Skinwalker Ranch show or anything like that. You're not going to see smoking gun evidence on these, because something that big, that scientifically important, would be done properly for me. And I think that's where the James Webb comes into things as well.
Yeah, exactly. But let me just ask you, because, you know, I always listen to your show, but you're so good at asking questions that people don't always ask you back. But where do you stand on all this at this point? You've been doing this research more intense than almost anyone else for a long time now. You know, what is your stance on the whole UFO topic at this point?
Let me just say it. Lots of people do a lot more research than me. But that's, yeah. Right now, I think if you're looking at... I've stuck by, I think the Tic Tac stuff, I don't think there's anyone in a Tic Tac. I think those are empty. I think those are probes that are... Mm-hmm. coming from something else, maybe not necessarily somewhere else. Lots of people talking about what might be under the water off the coast of California, stuff like that. You know, is something being made under the water? I think, yeah, like kind of ET probes potentially that were left here. Maybe those are all around the universe, the galaxy, you know, on different planets. I think you've then got to look at people's experiences, what they're going through. Different potential civilizations, abductions is a really tricky conversation. I think if you've not had those types of experiences, some have been really positive, some are really negative. It's a hard conversation to have. That's why I'm always happy to host experiencers and talk to them.
Yeah.
I think ultimately where it's going though is this phrase that the genie can't go back in the bottle or the toothpaste can't go back in the tube. That's not true. That could still happen. I think there's plenty of folks who would say that things have been pretty far down the line in the past and they have still cooled down again. We've seen the news cycle go up and down. But I think we're in a really good place. I think social media and the power of social media is helping push things forward. Not that there isn't a struggle both ways on social media as well, as we all know. But I think if we can get some more whistleblowers coming forward this year to say some things in a big way, it really needs the general public to get on board with that. David Grush made some incredible claims and statements that made worldwide news on a Thursday, and by a Monday, it wasn't worldwide news anymore.
It's really moving quickly these days. It's funny when you say probes, because I actually had a Danish guy contact me. He heard about my show and the promo on the radio, and he put it on, and he got really like excited because he had an experience back in 2005 where he was on a ship, a commercial ship, and he was outside drinking a cup of coffee with a Filipino colleague that he had, and this is between Hawaii and the American coast, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and he's standing there drinking his coffee, and this guy, we called him Morten, but he's anonymous on the show. He showed me all of his log papers and everything. And I actually got to meet him one day, like the most down to earth, guy from, you know, Jutland here in Denmark, don't mm-hmm. want to be the center of any attention. But he showed me, he told me this story, and that was my first story from an experiencer, so it really made an impact on me. But he was standing there on the deck with this guy from the Philippines, and suddenly this probe came and it hovered like maybe 10 feet away from them. And they were both losing their cups and their minds, and he felt that it was almost watching him. And then suddenly mm-hmm. it took off again with, you know, a speed, and he compared it to if you pulled it through a straw, you sucked mm-hmm. it through a straw the with the quickness. And he came home, he told his wife, and his wife was like, please don't tell anyone else this. And he kept quiet about this for 17 years or something, maybe even more, mm-hmm. Until he was on my podcast and, you know, was brave enough to tell his story. And now he's been more open about it. But yeah, stories like that really, I think we need to listen to people. I don't think people are not trying to scam or trying to fool anyone. So definitely we need to listen to more people. And, you know, I've had hundreds of those kind of stories here in Denmark.
Yeah, I think those kind of big media outlets like Netflix, Amazon Prime, for example, putting more content out, like Three Body Problem, as much as it's, you know, a sci-fi series, essentially, it's going to get people thinking, here's a different way to think about aliens, you know, not to spoil what happens for people in the series. Same with Diana Pasulka's stuff, when that's picked up and made. Tom DeLonge's Secret Machines project that was picked up and is to be made into a TV series. There's a lot of stuff that could come down the pipeline, I think, and that's why I say about media, that could really grab people's attention, that isn't just, here's someone coming out on the news who said something wild or outlandish, and then it goes away again. Well, do you know what? Here's a 15-part series that's going to take place over the summer, and you're going to sit down and watch it on Netflix every Friday night with your friends and family. And it just, you know, then you see the little news stories come in as well, and you go, I'm watching this thing about UFOs, and here's a guy on the news talking about UFOs, and here's this Danish guy talking about UFOs on his podcast. UFOs are everywhere in Denmark all of a sudden. So that I think could be a big, big thing. Not that you've not done, you've been on Netflix in Denmark, haven't you, reviewing The Witcher?
Oh, yeah, I actually did do that, yeah. Well, you do some research, Andy. So, I guess it was my long hair maybe that got me that job.
But yeah, no, but listen, we'll start wrapping up. And I just want to ask it lastly, obviously, your podcast is presented in Danish currently. You're hopeful of getting something produced in English. You mentioned the pilot that's been produced. How can people follow you and your work, and what's your social media contacts for them?
Yeah, so it's Frederik Dirks, D-I-R-K-S, on Instagram or X or wherever you tend to digest your social media and your UFO content. And if you have a VPN, you can listen to the show. We have had, you know, the who's of UFO environment on the podcast. And I think sometimes also when you have an astrophysicist in the room, that does something to some of these people. So I would definitely recommend that you listen to them. And recently we have Pippa Malmgren on. Have you ever had her on, Andy?
No.
Amazing. You should get her on. Former advisor to George W. Bush, and really in the know with all this stuff. And she had some very interesting things to say.
Awesome. Well, listen, Frederick, it's been great to get you back on. And I do think we should hook up and talk about the Three Body when it comes out. Always nice to get a different voice. And I think you'll help people understand me a little bit better with the Scottish accent, getting the Danish one on. So
it's been a lot of accents in one show.
I mean, we'll get Dan on as well, whose accent is Welsh, English and American all at the same time. So a little bit of everything, but really good to speak to you, Frederick. Well done with the podcast and all the work you've done in Denmark, and I'm glad to finally get a chance to talk to you.
Hey, you too, man. And one last thing, you were the first guy who helped me out in this crazy business here, so thank you so much, Andy.
I accept cash, I accept PayPal, Bitcoin. No, that's fine. Very well done. The success has all been yours, mate. So yeah, awesome, good speaking with you, mate.
Thank you, man.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.